for some people. You can always use somebody else's notes to study. But while taking the Bechina, you got to take your own notes. You got to use your own notes.
Rabbi?
By way of introduction, the Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah tells us that one reason why Rus is read on Shavuos is because the point of Megillas Rus is David HaMelech. And the very last psukim of Megillas Rus tell us about the birth of David HaMelech. The very last pasuk, the very last word. Ba'oved holy des Yishai v'Yishai holy des David. Yalkut Shimoni, and maybe this is the Yalkut Shimoni you're remembering, Akiva, says another reason why we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos is because Kabbalas HaTorah requires Mesiras Nefesh, motivation and dedication. Doesn't sound as good in English. Mesiras Nefesh. And this concept of Mesiras Nefesh can be learned from Rus on many different levels. So I would like to explore how this concept of Mesiras Nefesh plays a key role in this Sefer. We take a look at the first few psukim just to get a feel for the material. Vayihivim eshvot ha-shoftim, it was in the days of the judges. Vayihirov v'aretz, there was a famine in the land. Vayelech ish mi-beis lechem Yehuda logor bistei Moav, there was a man from Beis Lechem Yehuda who went to live in the fields of Moab. Hu v'ishto u'shnei vonav, he and his wife and their two sons. B'shem l'ish Elimelech, the name of this man was Elimelech. B'shem ishto Naomi, the name of the woman was Naomi. B'shem shnei vonav Machlon v'chilion, the two sons, Ephrasim, we'll see what that means. Beis Lechem Yehuda, from the area of Beis Lechem Yehuda, they arose, they moved, they Yushan, they went to stay moved, and they stayed there. Vayomos Elimelech Yish Naomi, Elimelech died, the husband of Naomi, but Yishoer Yush Nevanel, she and her two sons remained alive. Vayisulem Noshim Moabios, they married Moabite women, Shema Achas Orpo, Shema Shemis Rus, one Orpo, one Rus. Vayesh Vishon Kasser, Shonim, and they continued to live in Moab for 10 years. Vayamusu gam shnei Machlon v'chilion, Machlon and Chilion both died. Atishor ha'isha mishnei yeladeo me'ishah, and the woman, Naomi, was left alone, bereft of her two sons and her husband. Atokam hibichal osel, she and her daughters-in-law got up, atishim b'shtei Moav, to return from the state Moav, Shoma b'shtei Moav, they heard already in the fields of Moav, kipokat Hashem is Amro, that Kosh Baruch Hu remembered his nation, Loses lahem lochem, to give them bread to end the famine. Atete min hamoko mashahoisa shama, and she left from that place where she was. Ushtechel se'imo, with the two daughters along with her. Vetzilachna b'derech, they went on the road. Loshav l'eretz Yehuda, to go back to the land of Yehuda, to Israel. Atomer na'omi l'ushtechel se'a, na'omi said to her two daughters along, Lechna shovna isha l'veisima, you should go back to your mother's house. Yes, Hashem Imochem Chesed, Hashem should do for you a favor, Kasher Asisim and Amatim, as you were so nice to my dead sons, Vimodian, to me, Hashem should do Chesed to you. Yitain Hashem Lechem, Hashem should give you Matzen Menuch, you should find rest, which means Isha Beis Isha, a woman by her husband, you should get married. Atisha Glen, Vatzena Kolan, Vatzivkena. And they raised their voices and they cried. And they said to her, we're going to go back with you to Israel, to your country, to your people. My daughters-in-law, go home. Why will you come with me? Do I have more sons in my belly for you to marry? Why are you staying with me? Go, my daughters, go home. I'm too old to get remarried. Where I could say there's some hope. Even if I got married tonight, even if I had children, even if I could, she said, I'm not getting married again. I'm an old lady. Even if I do, till my children grow up, are you going to wait? Ad Asher Yigudolu until they grow up, they can marry you. I'm not going to make you a goodness. You won't be married to a man for all those years. Albinos, I know my daughters. I'm very bitter for you. Hashem's hand went out against me, and I'm not getting married again, not having children. You should leave me. They raised their voices. They cried more. Arba gave her mother-in-law a kiss and left. And Ruach stayed with her. I told her, and she said, Naomi said to Ruach, look, your sister left. Back to her nation, back to her foreign gods. Lowercase g. Shuvi achrei vintech. Go after your sister. Ruth said to her, "Al tifki bi lozvir, do not push me to leave you. Lo shu miachroach, to turn away from you. When you go, I will go. Vashatolini olin, where you sleep, I will sleep. Amich, ami, your nation is my nation. Ve'lokayach, ve'lokay, your gods, my God. Kashatamusi, almost. I will die like you will die. Vashamek aver, there I will be buried. Kol yaseh, Hashem leave. Kol Yosef, this is what Hashem is going to do for me. That's what he's going to add. Ki amavis yafir b'ni aveinach. Only death will separate us. Naomi saw that Ruth was stubborn not to leave, and she stopped trying to tell her to leave. And they both went out to Beis Lochem. They got to Beis Lochem. Everybody looked in a wonder, like a tame, like, whoa, Vatomer, Kolayir, Alayan. Vatomer, Hazos, Naomi, is that another? They hadn't seen her in 10 years. Vatomer, Alayan, Alti, Krenoli, Naomi. She said, don't call me Naomi, Krenoli, Mara, call me bitter. Hehemar, Shakai, Leek, Zakod, Ma'od, Zashem made very bitter my life. And even Leo, Halachti, I left full. Varekma, Shivani, I'm coming empty. Hashem, Loma, Sikrenoli, Naomi. I'm sorry. Varekam Hashivani Hashem. Hashem returned me empty. Lomasi Granly Naomi, why should you call me sweet? Hashem onabi. Hashem answered me v'shakai herli, and Hashem did bad to me. The teisha of Naomi v'rus molvia chalos ima. With that being said, Rus and Naomi amolvia Rus. Sorry, Naomi and Rus amolvia. Her daughter-in-law came back with her. Hashavim is Moav, returned from the lands of Moav. Ima bo beis lechem. They came to beis lechem in the land of Yehuda. Bitzchilas k'sir saorim at the beginning of the barley harvest season. That's the first parak. Akiva, that's very funny. There's a lot in that sefer, actually.
What?
Okay. Yeah, what I'm going to say, I don't think you're going to find much of in the art school. The summaries, of course, are sure going to overlap, but I have chidushim. Let's take a look at Rashi on Pasuk Aleph.
Can Rabbi share a screen?
Oh, it didn't share. Sorry. Thank you. Share. Is it shared now?
Yeah.
Yes. Ready?
Okay, let me put myself back on there so you can see me.
Ready?
Okay. Yes.
How come Naomi tells Rus that your sister returned back to her place to her gods when they already told her that they were gonna stay, they wanted to stay le'amich, that it says in Pasuk Yud, it says they told her that they wanna return with her to her people, but le'amich I thought meant that they want to dwell with the Jews but not be Jewish. So what? So she's returning to. She's not.
You're adding in so many things as assumptions to ask your question. We'll have to get there. Let's start from the beginning. Okay? Yeah. Write it down. It'll all be answered. All that will be answered. Bli nether. Says Rashi. By Yelech Ish. And a man went. Asher Godol Hoya Uparne Sador. Elimelech was extremely wealthy. He was the leader of the generation. The Yotzim Eretz Yisrael, the Chutzlaret, made Tzorot Hayat. He left Eretz Yisrael, the Chutzlaret, because of stinginess, narrow eyes. People came to him for money. There was a famine. And he looked at them, squinting through narrow eyes. You want money from me? His eye was stingy towards the poor who came to push him for money. And therefore he left. Asher the Godel Hador. Asher Godel Uparnes Hador. The Targum calls Elimelech a Gavarabba, a great man. The Gemara in Bava Basra of Tzadi Aleph, which I do not have for you, says that Elimelech was the brother of Salmon, which means he was the son of Nachshon ben Aminodov, a direct descendant of Yehuda. The Gemara says there in Bava Basra of Tzadi Aleph that Elimelech Godol Hador Hoya. He was the Godol Hador. So you got to ask yourself, how can the Godel Hador desert his people? How could he be so selfish, so miserly, so greedy? Can you imagine Rav Chaim Kanievsky decides, well, there's a famine here, and even though I have a lot of money, I'm also very rich, I'm stingy, I'm just going to pick up and leave. I'm going on a vacation, I'm going to Brazil. I'll be back someday. Can you imagine Rav Moshe Feinstein picking himself up and deserting his people in their time of need? How can we understand Elimelech, who the Gemara calls Bar Lador, Bar Basha Tzani Aleph Medalev, top of the page, a little below the first couple lines? How can he just desert his people? Furthermore, Elimelech is referred to as Vayelech Ish. Ish in Tanakh always means choshev. Just like by the Meraglim, where Rashi says in Bamidbar, Perikin Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, Rashi says, Anoshim Chashuvim. Yeah, they sinned, but they were Anoshim Chashuvim. Elimelech also is called Ish, choshev. And furthermore, the Pasuk says, V'shem ha'ish, v'shem ha'ish in Pasuk Beis, v'shem ha'ish Elimelech. Whenever you have that formulation, shem ha'ish, it's like in Megillas Esther, Ushmo Mordechai. That pattern, Chazal tell us, signifies chashivas as well. Anshei Shem, people of great name, great men. Elimelech was a giant. Whenever it talks about a Rasha, it doesn't say Ushmo, and then the name of the person. It says Paro Shmo. You know? It first says the name, then says he's a Shmo. But when it says Ushmo Mordechai, or B'Shem Ha'ish, once again that depicts Chashivus. So Elimelech was a giant. How could he be like this? How could he be stingy? How could he be a deserter of his people? It's not going to be a short answer, Abosai. What we're going to do is design a very complicated answer that will explain many, many chazals. Now, typically, chazal minimize the sins of our heroes. We all know the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Hei and Beis. Somebody says that Reuven did a chait, but Yishkav, the pasuk says, as Bilha, absolutely not true. He just moved the bed. Torah says he did terrible adultery of his father's wife. Chas v'shalom. Nisha'om Reuven chata ein el atoah. Says the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Nun Vav. Anybody who says that David sinned, Eina Ela Toa. Anybody who says Shlomo HaMelech sinned by worshipping idols, Eina Ela Toa. Anybody who says that the Bnei Eli sinned, that they slept with the women who brought the karbanos after they gave birth, Eina Ela Toa. Each one of those things, the Gemara minimizes the sin. The Bnei Eli, just kept the women there overnight. They didn't bring the karbanos right away. They said 5 o'clock. It's a quitting time. Come back at 9 a.m. And the women had to stay over in hotels. The alien never touched them, chas v'shalom. But they weren't able to go home to their husbands that night. They could live with their husbands. So that's called the alien slept with the women. David HaMelech, Bathsheba was divorced from her husband. He committed no sin. Reuven committed no sin. Shlomo HaMelech never worshipped idols. He let his foreign wives think that they could get him into it. But he never did. The Pesukim often depict our Gedolei Gedolei Tanakh as doing terrible sins. It's one of the proofs that the people like to give, you know, that our Torah is true, because they even point out the sins of the great people. They weren't perfect. The Alter Slabodka expressed this as a general principle. People in Tanakh were great. They were super great. And he says, just look up the Doros. We like to talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein. The Alter Slabodka didn't know Rav Moshe Feinstein. He knew the Chofetz Chaim. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein knew Shas, Poskim, backwards and forwards. The little comments on the sides of the Shulchan Aruch he had learned hundreds of times. His gonus, if you read his Igros Moshe, or even more in his Dibros Moshe, was like a previous generation. And yet, Rav Moshe looked up to the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim viewed Rabbi Akiva Eger, 100 years before him, 150 years before him, as being incredible. Rabbi Akiva Eger looked up to the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon looked up to the Rambam, to the Rashba, to Rashi, to the Amoraim. The Rishonim viewed the Amoraim as being holier than holy. And you know how they viewed the Tanoim? So when you go all the way up, back up the Doros, you see the previous Doros are greater and greater and greater. When we come to Tanakh, we understand these people were Gedolei Gedolei. We're not talking about friends. We're not talking about people we know. We're not talking about people we could relate to in any sense, except they were human. They can sin. We just need a magnifying glass to see what those sins were exactly. The Torah says it in a very strong way, because since they were so great, even a tiny sin is magnified. And then we'll notice it. So the Torah points it out in a way we'll notice it. But we have to understand, based on Chazal, we put these people on a pedestal. They were tremendous. They were great. Whatever sin they did was what we would call a dake dakos, the slightest. Yes, sin they did, and Chazal will point out what the sin was, but we have to truly believe it was so small, had we seen it ourselves, we wouldn't have noticed it as a sin. We need Chazal to point it out, we need the Pesukim to say something.
Do you think, like, looking back, like, we say there's times in the Torah where, like, we say, like, when someone spoke a big, big tzaddik with big Lashon Hara, how do we, like, know, like, they would want that to be publicized? Like, I feel like if a big Gadol did something very big,
Chofetz Chaim writes in one of his Sfarim, we see that all of Tanakh is speaking Lashon Hara about all these people.
Yeah.
The answer basically is, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rules. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that Klal Yisrael would learn from these great examples. What bigger toelis is there than that? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot sin by saying Lashon Hara, removed from us whatever sin there might be in saying over these things about the people in Tanakh. And that got extended to some extent to the Torah Shebaal Peh, that it was understood on whatever level when Ravina Ravashi published the Shas, if there were things about various people that were improper and yet were publicized, they took the laws of Lashon Hara very seriously and enabled and allowed us to actually read certain things because of the knowledge that it would enable us to grow. It doesn't mean that you and I can use that reason. But Chazal understood when it could be used. So the closers of Tanakh, Ravina Ravashi, knew when that could be used. So in sum, our question is, Elimelech was awesome. Elimelech was great. We see sins that are mentioned, but we know we have to minimize them. So how can we explain the sin of Elimelech? Now let me introduce you to a rule which may have come up in some of our shmuzin over the year. The Bali Musar have a general approach to human nature. They split the conscious from the subconscious behavior. One example we did see in the shmuz introducing the second semester. The Chidush HaLev points out that on the pasuk that Noah was driven into the teva mipnei mehamabul, because of the water of the Mabul. Remember this? Rashi said that Noah was miktani amuna. He was literally pushed in. The Mabul was up to his knees. He didn't go in. It was up to his waist. He didn't go in. When it was up to his neck, he went in. And the question is, how is it possible that Noah was miktani amuna? He didn't realize the Mabul was coming. He built a teva for 120 years. He gave tochacha to the people of the time. He rebuked them for 120 years. He heard directly from Hashem that the Mabul's coming. How is it possible that he was miktani amuna? He didn't believe it was really happening. The Bali Musar answer, there's a difference between the conscious and the subconscious. The conscious mind, the logical mind, he knew it was coming. But in his heart, his emotions, what's called his subconscious, he just couldn't believe the whole world would be wiped out. How's it possible? What's the world going to look like? He can't imagine such a world. And the subconscious, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter pointed out, is much stronger than the conscious. And therefore, he did not want to enter. He did not enter the table till the water was up to his neck. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter gave him muscle. You remember the muscle that the carpenter, who had a son that he hated, lazy, good-for-nothing bum, and an apprentice, an assistant to his excellence, the apple of his eye. When there was a fire in the house, in the middle of the night, and the carpenter came running out into the hallway on the top floor of his house, he leaves his bedroom, he's running down the hallway, there's fire everywhere. And his son and his apprentice both live in the house. Son lives in a room on the right side, the apprentice in the room on the left side. If he runs into the room to save the apprentice and jumps out the window, son dies. If he runs into the room to save the son, the apprentice dies. What does he do? He's standing in the hallway, the fire is ablazing. He's got his nightgown on and his nightcap on with a little pom-pom. What does he do? At that moment, he's not thinking. At that moment, he's not using his conscious. He's using his emotions, his subconscious, which overrides the conscious. And he goes and he saves his son, who he loves deeply. This is the sort of conscious and subconscious, the intellect versus the emotion. The Bali Musar points out the heart and the mind, they may be a foot apart, but really they're rachok, mizruch, nimayrut. And the heart almost always overrides the mind, unless you train yourself using muster, that the mind can control the heart. So I'd like to apply this theory over here by setting up step one, that the sin that Rashi points out, he's just quoting Chazal, that Elimelech performed, the tzoros ayin, the stinginess, it must have been a dakos, the tiniest sliver of a subconscious stinginess, an unnoticed urge. A true Bal Musar, a true Godel Hador, really should have worked on himself, discovered that he had this negiah, this subconscious bias. It's called a negiah by the Bali Musar. Subconscious bias that was going to manipulate all of his true and logical thinking. He did not apparently learn Musar enough to figure that out. He did not introspect enough to hat that this negiah, this subconscious bias, was driving all of his strategizing. But we can rest assured it was just the tiniest slight. We never would have noticed it. You and I never would have seen it. We would have not have ever thought that this was based on anything that was stinginess. He did not leave Eretz Yisrael because of stinginess. He did. The stinginess was there. It was deep down in the subterranean passages. It's there, but it's tiny. It needs a big magnifying glass to notice it. So we're not saying the Chazal was wrong. Chazal was referring to this tiny drop that ended up controlling a lot. But what was Elimelech thinking consciously? That's what we'd like to develop, a tremendous theme, a tremendous chiddush. What was it that Elimelech was thinking consciously? The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says, the Pasuk said, Vayelech Ish in Beis Lechem Yehuda. Where else do we have a phrase, Vayelech Ish in Chumash? Where do we have Vayelech Ish?
Rabbi by Moshe and his father.
Let's go earlier. By his father.
Yeah.
Amram.
Yeah.
Says Vayelech Ish in Beis Levi. Says the Al-Sheikh, just like Vayelech Ish became a marriage and produced a Goel Yisrael, Melech Moshe Rabbeinu, so to hear, Elimelech thought, I'm going to also carry out some sort of a marriage, not necessarily with him himself because he's married already to an other. We're going to arrange a marriage, and through that marriage, we're going to get a Goel. A Mashiach, a Melech. The Medrash actually says, yes, the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says, this could be based on Kabbalah, how he knew these things, that Vayelech here is like Vayelech Ishmi Beis Levi in Shmos Parak Beis. Just like in Shmos, it led to a Goel Yisrael, a Redeemer of the Jews, a Melech, a Moshe Rabbeinu. So to hear, Elimelech wanted to get a Goel, produce a Redeemer. Again, they were in the middle of a famine. A Mashiach, a Melech. We'll see why. Not yet. The Medrash says, that's the meaning of Elimelech's name. Some people love these things, some people hate these things. Eli Melech. To me, will come the Malchus. The Malchus will be drawn to me. Remember, this is the days of the Shoftim, before Shaul, before David. David was the great-grandson of Rus, who Boaz will eventually marry. Right now, Rus is getting married to one of Elimelech's children. To me will come the Malchus. After all, Elimelech had tremendous yichus, tremendous lineage. He was a direct descendant of Peretz. Who was Peretz, son of?
Yehuda.
Yehuda and?
Tamar.
His mother? Tamar, very Tamar. Good. Melech polates geder, Hazal say. A melech breaks fences. The king is allowed to break people's fences, go through people's property. He has eminent domain. It's called eminent domain. He has permission. He's the king. So ultimately, all property is his. He can break down fences and go through property if he needs to. Melech polates geder. Poretz, Peretz, is a midah of a king, a breakthrough thing. Elimelech was a descendant of Miriam. Miriam is called Ephras. And in Pasuk Beis,
wait, so, Rabbi.
The name is Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. He had two sons of Machlon and Chilion. Ephrosim. They were descendants of Miriam. Ephrosim. Yes. Furthermore, Elimelech had tremendous yichus, tremendous lineage. He came not only from Melech Poretz Geder, from Peretz, he also came from Miriam. Rashi doesn't mention that one here. Says the Gemara in Sota Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, Ephras leads to David and Malchus. Pua.
So Rabbi.
Yeah.
So basically, he was saying that he was hoping that since he had good yichas, that someone would that they would get a redeemer and save them.
Oh, I'll explain to you how he'll save them. Right now, I'm just describing that this element of malchus existed within Elimelech and within his lineage.
So why would that make him do what he did?
Oh, you have to be very patient. As I said, it's not a short answer. It's a lot of pieces to it. Miriam had another name. What was Miriam's name? What was Miriam's other name when she was a midwife?
Pua?
Pua.
Pua. Because of what she did,
anyone else just lose ready?
Yeah,
I don't hear anything.
Revy, we lost Revy.
We're still holding on to the values. We just can't hear you this second.
If everyone else could mute, we possibly continue. I can't mute myself.
Revy, we lost you for a minute there.
I know, because I muted everyone, because other people were not muted. I need everyone to mute. If I mute all, I end up muting myself.
Daddy, what's the name
of the
on
Donnie? Okay, I'm back. I figured out how to do it. Okay. What was the reward given to Miriam for saving the babies?
Batim.
What does Rashi say in Chumash?
Vayaslam Batim. Batikahuna Maria. Amachos.
Malchus. Bate Malchus. The saving babies. Again, Elimelech was a descendant of Miriam. Miriam was married to who? Who married Miriam?
Kalev.
Kalev, correct. Kalev married Miriam. They had a son, Hur. Perhaps they had a daughter, too. Married to Nachshon ben Aminadab. And that daughter was Elimelech's mother. So Elimelech's mother was the daughter of Nachshon ben Aminadab. Elimelech was himself, therefore, a descendant of Miriam, and a direct descendant of the line of Yehuda. That's how Miriam and the line of Yehuda going through David joined. Elimelech had the perfect yichus for kingship to come from him. He had it from all directions, mother and father. Furthermore, who did Elimelech marry? What was her name? We had it in the Pesukim already. What was Elimelech's wife's name?
Naomi.
Says the Gemara in Bava Basra, Tzadi Aleph and Aleph. Naomi was the granddaughter of Nachshon ben Aminadab. Elimelech married his niece. So now their children, Nachman and Kilion, had the ultimate yichus for Malchus, coming from their mother, their father, from every direction. There was Malchus built into the genes. This all became part of who Nachman and Kilion were. Okay, this is all very nice. What does that do with anything? Let's phrase the question like this. With all this in mind, why did Elimelech leave now? Why did he leave now? It's not because of Tzoras Ayin, though ultimately it will come from that subconscious drive. What was his conscious mission to leave now? Why was he leaving now? He knows all about Malchus, Elimelech. I'm all about being Malchus. What does Malchus do with anything, as Levi Yaakov asked before?
Wasn't Rosa Prinsa?
Ruth, yes, she was. We're going to get to that too.
So, maybe, Rabbi, maybe you could say that since he had such good machas, he was maybe confident that something, a miracle was going to happen.
A miracle to do what? What was his goal? What was his point?
Because maybe to save people from the hunger.
Oh, and how was his finding Malchus going to save them from hunger?
Because it happened. Didn't it happen to some of them? Actually, no.
Well, didn't what happened? A good king saves the economy.
So is he just like a good president?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's much better. Because we're doing a Klal Yisrael here. If Klal Yisrael had a famine, why was there a famine in Klal Yisrael? Did it just happen?
No, it was because they weren't doing good. Hashem was either mad at them.
They were not doing. There was something they were doing wrong. Now we need to determine what it was they were doing wrong, and how having a king will be the answer to answer that question. This is the path that we're taking, and it starts. As the Gemara Megillah says in the Yudim Beis, the Megillah here starts the word Vayihi. Vayihi b'mei Shchod HaShoftim. Vayihi, the Gemara says, Megillah Daf Yud Amid Beis tells us something bad is coming. What's bad? First pasuk. We see it all from the first pasuk. It's not bad to think. It's good to think. But I didn't see what you wrote before. What's bad? Here the pasuk says, Vayihi b'mei Shchod HaShoftim. Simulating it. Vayihi b'mei Shchod HaShoftim. Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz. What does that mean? Vayihi b'mei Shchod HaShoftim. It doesn't say Vayihi b'mei HaShoftim. I mean, it was the time period of the Shoftim. In fact, Megillas Rus apparently comes, says the Malbim, right after the end of Shoftim. Shoftim Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Chof Hei. Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Chof Hei, and Shoftim says, by Yomim Ohem, in those days, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, there was no Jewish king, Ish HaYoshar Be'enov Yaseh. Everyone did whatever they wanted. There was no king. And therefore, it was a generation that was Shfot HaShoftim. How do you translate that, Shfot HaShoftim? A generation that judged the judges. The judges in court are the ones who pass in Chayiv Potter and Dinei Mamonos and other things, even Nisr V'Hetzer. And people judged the judges. Were they davlekaf schus when they were judging the judges? Says the Gemara in Bava Basra daf tayes vav amid beis, that when the judge would say a psak, they would turn to the judges and say, "Who are you? You're a big tzaddik. You claim that I steal something, that there's a splinter between my eyes. There's a beam in between your eyes. I know about all your bad business dealings. I know about how you treat your wife and your family." They had no respect for the judges. They judged the judges. Rashi says over there in Bava Basra, the judges were mekulkal. The shoftim, some of the shoftim. They were mekulkal, they were bad. Tosfos says, it's not true, all the shoftim were good. The answer is given for Rashi. The Shoftim were good, but people claimed they were bad. And that undermined their power. Vayihi b'mei Shchod HaShoftim. Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz. When they're judging the judges, they don't keep the mitzvahs. Because the judge is the ones who paskin. You did right, you did wrong. You kept halacha, you didn't keep halacha. There's no power, there's no authority. And even the judges, if you respect judges, okay, but if you don't respect them, if you're always judging them, remember how we once said that Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, you will never be able to be Asel Chorav if you're not Donis Chaver Chalikav Schos. If you don't judge favorably, you're going to say, oh, the rabbi said this, rabbi, you know how many people told me, you know why they know Minyanim? Because the rabbis, they're overreacting. They made a mistake and they didn't close the shuls fast enough, and now they're not letting anyone have Porch Minyanim. People will come up with anything and everything to do what they want and to blame the rabbis. Hashem punishes. Like the Rambam we learned yesterday. All tzaras happen to us to force us to do tshuva. Nothing has happened since. So I would like to suggest, this is my big chiddush. At least one. There was no control through a melech, with a government, with police. There were shoftim, but no shotrim. Without a melech, each person was on his own. I don't hold of the judge. The judges were the leaders of the people. I don't hold of them. There were no shotrim to enforce the shoftim. After Din Torah, no one could enforce a psak. Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Beis, have you mispalel bishlomo shel malchus? You better daven for the government. Shil mole moro. Because if not for fear of the government, the police, the jails, the long arm of the law, ish esrei ehu chayim blow, people will swallow each other alive. Anarchy. You can have all the judges you want, but if I don't respect the judges, and I don't have a government to enforce the judges, I don't have a melech on top of the government, everyone will sin. Therefore, my hero of Baharetz was a punishment. A punishment. Here we don't feel guilty saying that. This was a punishment. So Elimelech said, you know what I'm going to do? You know how I'm going to solve the problem of the wrong? How am I going to make everyone do tshuva? How am I going to do it? I'm going to leave Eretz Yisrael, Dafka now, to find elements of Malchus that will help end the Ra'av. Because if I can found the Malchus, I don't mean like the word find, I mean to begin, to start. If I can found the country, if I can found the Malchus, Eli Melech, to me, is the Malchus. I'm the one who's supposed to invent this government. They will enforce the Shoftim. It'll bring law and order. With this solution, he thought he could force a quasi-tshuva, tshuva meyira. People will stop sinning quickly because they no longer can sin by being shvod ha-shoftim. There's a government. You have no way out of what the shoftim say now. Tshuva meyira. It's better than tshuva me'ava, obviously. But tshuva meyira, he thought he could accomplish. And that would end the law. This was Elimelech's grand plan. This is what I have dubbed the mission.
This, why did he leave for his plan?
This conscious intent of Elimelech, I think everyone would agree, is a very noble cause, very fitting of a Gadol Hador.
Why did he have to leave? I don't know.
Oh, okay. So, the next question we have to answer is, we're not going to answer it today, why did he have to go to Moab, of all places, to accomplish his mission? We know why he was leaving now. But why Moab? Should I begin the answer now? Yeah. I'll begin the answer now, and then I'm going to leave off with three questions. We'll see if I can begin the answer now.
Can I do this quick?
Yeah, sure.
Don't we say that in Pirkei Avos, I think chapter like 5, that the reason why there's a Rav Baretz is because people didn't take Meiser? Wouldn't that be special?
Oh, that could be one reason. That could be one reason. Rav doesn't have to only be because of that. That also might just be symbolic of people not respecting the Kohanim, the Levim, And that can lead to all sorts of sin because you know who the teachers were. All the teachers in Klal Yisrael were the Kohanim and the Levim. The Sifte Kohen Yishmeru Das. The Kohanim are the ones who kept the law. They're the ones who fought. Sifte Kohen, the Baal Kohen.
So Perkei Avos is not meant to be taken literally in that regard? It seems to be implying that, let's say, the reason for X is Y. It seems to be a function. Like, not two variables. Only one variable per input.
There was a rov in Canaan when Avram Avinu got there. It wasn't because of a lack of taking my sister. I'd have to see the Mishnah, and I have to look at all the Mepharshim to deal with the question from left field. But just off the cuff, it doesn't necessarily mean that's the only reason. It's probably the first thing that one should look into, because mice are supposed to be taken from food. If you mistreat the food by doing the mitzvahs, by not doing the mitzvahs, tlius baris on the food, makes sense. Means the connected mitzvah, that would be the first thing to look into. But it doesn't necessarily mean that's the only thing. And I'd have to look at the Mishnah to be able to answer it better.
You
Why do you have to go to Moab? The Gemara says in Bava Kama Daf Lamed Chesim and Beis, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to destroy Moab. Hashem didn't let him. Moab were very evil. What they did to Klal Yisrael when Klal Yisrael came out of the Mitzrayim, they gave them salty fish, they wouldn't give them water, they wouldn't let them go through the land. Moab was very, very bad. Bava Kama 38b, Lamed Chesim and Beis. He wanted to destroy Moab. They really were stingy. They were not nice. Hashem said no. He said two pitos, two little birds, are going to come out of Moab. Two girls who are going to convert and become linked to Malchus. Rus came from Moab, great-grandmother David HaMelech, and Na'ama came from Ammon. And Naama was one of the girls who married Shlomo HaMelech, a very important one. She's the one who gave birth to Rehoboam, the heir to Shlomo's throne, and eventually Mashiach. So these two girls who would eventually convert, the Chazal called them predos, birds, two little birds, chicks, there it is, that they had to become part of Klal, so therefore you can't destroy Moab. Rav Moshe David Vali, who's a Talmud of the Mesillas Yesharim. Mesillas Yesharim was really a Kabbalah person. So there are a lot of Kabbalistic things. Rav Moshe David Vali wrote a Sefer on part of Tanakh, and he has amazing Chidusha, just amazing. And it helps us out over here. Elimelech was a Baal HaMesorah. But again, we said he was the God of Ador. He knew about this conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem about destroying Moab. He knew this Chazal was part of the Masorah. He knew, therefore, there was a special neshama out there in Moab that would be an antecedent of Malchus Beis David, of Malucha. Elimelech knew this. Reb Chaim Vital tells us that Adam HaRishon had within him only Jewish neshamas. The Sitra Achra made the neshamas of the Goyim. That's why the Mishnah says, Atem Kruyim Adam, the Ein Umos HaOlam Kruyim Adam. That's why Chazal say, Jews are called Adam. Goyim are not called Adam.
Where did Goyim come from?
The Sitra Achra, the Satan, created the Goyim Shabbos. I would have thought that was Kvira. That's part of Milton's whole theory. But the Rav Chaim Vital said it. Chaim Vital, Talmud of the Arizal. He said that the Goyim's Shabbos did not come from Adam HaRishon. They were created separately. That the Sitra Achra. Hashem gave the Sitra Achra the ability to create these neshamas. Only Jewish neshamas came from Adam. Yeah. Sitra Achra is the Satan. Says the Or Chaim HaKadosh. when Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, Neshamis went flying out of him, and the Sitra Achra, the Satan, made sure that some of those Neshamis ended up by Goyim. But since those Neshamis came out of Adam and were truly Jewish in the core, eventually they became Gerim. So Elimelech, having a Mesorah, as we heard from Rav Moshe David Vali, he had a Mesorah. He knew about the conversation between Moshe and Hashem, that somewhere in Moab, there's a gene of Malchus, a neshama of Malchus, that is meant to convert to Judaism. One of those neshamas that left Adam, when he ate the Eitz Hadas, that became a goy, that once redeemed and converted, can become the antecedent of Malchus. He knew he had to find that neshama and bring it into Klal Yisrael in order to fulfill his plan to defeat the Vayihi Meshvot HaShoftim, Tshuva Meira, to be able to bring Klal Yisrael back and to remove the Ra. That's a mission. That's a mission. That's a mission for Gadol HaDor. So, yes, there's subconscious. So it's Ayin, but we'll get to fit that all together soon.
Rabbi, so basically, so he went to Moab so he could bring back the girl that was supposed to become Gareth?
Vayelech Ish, said the Alsk. Vayelech Ish Mideis Levi. He went to create a marriage that would make Malchus in order to solve his problem. And Geula for Klal Yisrael from the Ra of at that time. We're going to start next time we do this with three questions. One is, what element of Malchus was in Moab? Number two, how did an aspect of Malchus get there? And number three, how is Elimelech going to find it? Did he have a Malchusometer or something? He's going to go searching for gold out there. So number one, what element of Malchus was in Moab? Number two, how did an aspect of Malchus get there? Number three, how is Elimelech going to find it? This is a dream, Rabosai. This is a real chiddush. Chiddush. It's a panorama. It's all based on Chazal and Mefarshim. I really didn't make up anything myself, just putting a lot of things together.
Rabbi,
one step that I did out, but yeah.
What was the source for maybe saying that naturally, I mean, Adam married the daughter?
The attempt to put together, since we know that Malchus Beis David was descended both from Miriam and from Shevet Yehuda, we needed to find a way to put those two families together, right? Because Miriam was promised Malchus. How did she enter into that Malchus lineage? She married Kalev ben Yefuna. So the possibility is that they had a daughter, and that daughter was married to Nachshon ben Aminadab. Because we know that Nachshon ben Aminadab was the grandmother of Naomi. We know that Nachshon ben Aminadab was the uncle of Elimelech. So, and we know that Malchus came through, eventually, Elimelech Naomi through Rus and Boaz. So we'll see exactly how that worked. It eventually went through Boaz. Boaz was the brother of Elimelech, as you recall, the whole Yibam issue at the end. So in order for Malchus to happen through Rus, married to Boaz, Boaz, who was the brother of Elimelech, had to come from this yichus of Nachshon ben Aminadab, which goes back to Yehuda, and somehow Miriam had to get in there. So this is the only part that's my own chiddush that I have no actual source for, just by force of the yichus, that it must be, at least perhaps it was, that Miriam and Kalev had that daughter who was married to Nachshon ben Aminadab, and the mother of Elimelech. That's my own conjecture. That's the part that in my notes I have, I'll go out on a limb to say this. Because we got to combine Miriam to this family. Just like this girl was the mother of Elimelech, she was also the mother of Boaz. Again, Boaz eventually married Ruth, and through Ruth came out of his daughter. So we have to be able to connect somewhere in there between Miriam and Elimelech's family, Boaz, those two families. The best way I could do it is by Miriam and Kalev having a daughter who was married to Nachshon and Aminadab, having the children, Elimelech, Boaz, and so on. That's the missing link. Okay, but that's my own. As I was just saying, all this based on Chazal and so on, except that one little point, which is my own conjecture.